Welcome to Shetland with Laurie, a podcast dedicated to Shetland, the place and the people, with me, Laurie Goodland, a writer and tour guide based at 60 degrees north. The Shetland with Laurie podcast is for people who have visited Shetland, or who would like to visit, or for those who would just like to know a little bit more about life here. So welcome, I'm so glad you're here. Hello and welcome back to season 2 of the Shetland with Laurie podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to be back here and bringing you the very first episode in this new season. It's good to be back behind the mic, and I've really missed being able to talk to you all on the podcast. So on today's show, I am interviewing Ellie Duncan from Island Ceramics. Ellie is a ceramicist and photographer who makes incredible, one-of-a-kind, handcrafted pieces, and these are all inspired by her love of the sea and her island home. So in the episode, we talk about how she made her dream and her hobby become a reality, and how she now works full-time in her studio. We also talk about the inspiration behind the pieces and how they're inspired by the Shetland dialect words and the ever-changing seas around us. So without any further ado, we will say hello to Ellie and welcome her on to today's show.
Hello, Ellie. Welcome to the Shetland with Laurie podcast.
Hello. Thank you for asking me to come on.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on and speak to me today. I am a massive fan of your work. I'll get you to speak a bit about your work in a pretty minute. Can you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what it is that you do?
Yeah, so I produce ceramics that are inspired by the sea, the coastline around Shetland, and I just have two collections at the moment, but I want to expand my collections.
People ask me, what is it that you do? And I have no idea how to actually pigeonhole myself. Do you feel like that?
I do, yeah. It's and because I'm so new as well, it's you don't want to give yourself a title nearly of anything you're doing. Do you know what I mean?
It can sometimes feel like you are... Yeah, you're categorising yourself and that you... you're then hemming yourself into this one box.
I think, what I would say is I produce ceramics that are inspired by the sea, that have strong connections to Shetland. So all my collections are named in Shetland dialect, with words that are related to the sea or the weather. I've got a few different collection names kind of in the bag that I'd like to bring out. I just have two collections at the moment. But yeah, that's them.
It's exciting because you're actually relatively new. So when was it that you launched your business?
So I launched in, I think it was the end of January this year. Yeah. But I mean, I've been building it up for a while and it just wasn't ready. I just thought, I want to get it right. So I had the idea about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I've been building on it for a while and just, getting my ability up to the standard to actually be able to sell anything. So I launched in end of January.
And you said about getting your ability up to be able to sell things. Mm-hmm. So what about your journey into ceramics? How did you come to be at the potter's wheel?
Well, when I was a child, I mind watching, I think it was a programme on glass making, when you blowing glass. And I think it was that, or it was maybe making ceramics. I just remember thinking, that's it. I'm gonna make some of that one day.
Oh, really?
I thought, when I have a home of my own, I'm going to have, some of my own bowls or some glasses I've made. I don't know why. And I was at a point in my life where I thought, I need to do something for me. I want to be more creative. So I went down to Edinburgh to Sion Clayworks, and I did a course that was just 2 days on my own. So I just went on my own to Edinburgh.
Amazing.
And then I that was it. I was I'm doing this. Bought a wheel and just practiced. never made anything, but just practice. And I went to them again around autumn time. Yeah, and that was it. So I just went to them twice because it was 2 days, it was one-on-one, so I was able to get a lot of content into that, and they were amazing. If anybody would want to try out, I would say to go to them. And they're in Scotland as well, and they were so supportive.
I can put a link in the show notes for that if you sent me.
That would be good, yeah. You really have to get your own way of doing things. So, you know, somebody can show you how they throw, but you really need to figure it out for yourself. We're all so different. And I had to teach myself a lot and just practice. And it was so hard. Like, there was points I was like, what am I doing? But I knew that I wanted to do this. So I just kept going.
I know. I think the only experience that I have is when we were at school, we had like a potter's wheel in the art department. Mm. And we had to try and make, I think it was a candle holder. For putting a tea light in. My mum still got it. I think she's quite proud of it, but I never did tell her that actually the art teacher had like a lot of input into making it.
Do you know, I worked with clay once, but it was never on the wheel at school. So it's funny to think, like, if I had, I don't know.
Wow. So
yeah, it's strange.
So you basically had this like epiphany when you were growing up that you thought I'm gonna make something on the potter's wheel. I'm gonna make my own ceramics. And so you So then what age were you when you went down to Edinburgh and took that kind of first step into
this? Was just a couple of years ago, so I was 21.
Okay.
I think because you notice stuff when you're a child, and I think it's really important to notice what children enjoy doing, because it definitely means something, any age though. I think if you have an inkling of interest, just give it a go. You don't need to commit to it, but just give it a go. So this was one of those things that just sat with me. I was like, yeah, one day. And I got to the point where I was like, right, I need to do something for myself. So that's what I did. Just went down to Edinburgh, did the course. I was hooked. I came back and I was just like, oh, it was so relaxing. It's not so relaxing now because there's a bit more pressure, but yeah, it was such a nice creative outlet.
So that's really something that's quite interesting, is that you've taken it from being a hobby and something that you do in your spare time alongside like a day job, mm-hmm. and you have now given up the traditional day job, and you are now solely focusing on the ceramics and growing that into a creative business.
Yeah, so it was quite a leap to make. And I have had people who are like, oh, that's quite risky. from your job, you're qualified in and you've been in for years. But at the time I was on furlough, I'd had months not at my work. I'd been practicing throughout the pandemic making, and I was so creative, and I was like, I'm not willing to let go of this version of myself and just this creativity I've been in. I was able to be in it for months, and I thought, I just want to live in this. So I just bit the bullet, did it, decided to start the business.
And so far, I mean, you have really gone from strength to strength. You launched your website recently, and you've had two hugely successful sellout evenings where you've sold your pieces that you've created. And I know that they were hugely successful. The first time I went on to try and buy a bowl, I wanted two bowls. I logged in, I think, 5 minutes after you opened, and everything was gone. And then the second time I like had an alarm set on my phone, and so I was ready, and I did get pieces, but I'm telling you, I was like sweating trying to get through the checkout and make sure that I secured a couple of bowls, because they are truly stunning. So I mean, how does it feel to have the website launched and have just so much positivity around what it is that you've kind of put your heart and soul into?
It's You can't even explain it. Like, it's so lovely. But at the same time, you're like, you doubt yourself. You know, you don't, it'd be strange to make something and be like, this is amazing. There's always doubts and of your own ability. But yeah, it's, I think more than anything, it's like my connection to the sea is just so strong. Like, I just love it. It's my go-to. And I think just connecting with other people on that level is what gets me the most.
Yeah.
And that it could resonate with someone. It just, yeah, that fills me up with a lot of happiness.
And you mentioned earlier that the collections that you've got two collections at the moment, mm-hmm. and that they have names that relate to the sea. And it's that, I mean, if you go on your website, you can see that very much like what inspires you is the sea. So yeah. Could you tell us the name of the collections and what those mean? And kind of how you develop them.
So the first collection is the Laibrack collection, and in Shetland dialect that means the surf. And it's, so I've got a blue collection that's very obviously representing the sea, but this one, Lorigob Seafoam, a little bit more grey and just kind of moodier. So Lorigob, this means seafoam, and it's when seafoam is driven up into, you know, the calm parts of the cliffs when it's stormy.
Yeah.
And when you look down at it, when you're up on top of the cliff, it's not completely white. It does have like this silvery look to it because it's silky. It's got like a silky texture to it. And so, yeah, that's what I came up with.
And they're both collections are absolutely stunning.
Oh, thank you. I do want to get more blues and greens, but that was the two that worked. So I just thought, yeah, I'll run with these two and eventually expand.
Yeah. And I really loved that you've named them using like some of the Shetland dialect words that we have here.
You.
And I mean, in my season one of the podcast, I did a big episode about language and why I find that language really important as like a way of kind of rooting you to a place and why we should protect it. So is Shetland's kind of heritage and that protection of language and dialects, that's something that is important to you as well?
Absolutely, because I don't have a strong Shetland dialect. It depends who I'm speaking to, but you do, Laurie. And it's like, I was like, oh, I mean, I don't really have much of a Shetland dialect, but yeah, I wanted to use them.
Yeah.
And there were so many names, related to the sea, that I was like, oh my goodness, like, yeah, I can go into a few of these.
I think with the sea, so many of the words that we have are just so beautifully descriptive.
They are beautiful. Like, I think the Shetland dialect is beautiful. And like Lorigob, it's like, oh.
You can nearly picture it in your mind. You don't even need to understand, I think, with some of these descriptive words that we have in the dialect. I think that you don't even need to know what they mean, because it's nearly like the word itself paints like an image in your mind of what it is trying to tell you, what it's trying to describe. They're just so beautifully descriptive.
Yeah, it's lovely. And there was words that were more... Like, I haven't heard the word Laibrack or Lorigob very often, but there is words that I do have that I could go into a collection with that are more common. But I decided not to go for that common word because I wanted something a little different. Yeah,
yeah, the kind of more common ones would maybe be like Mareel and Shurmal and beautiful words that you hear more frequently.
It is, yeah. But yeah, I just love the words. I love them.
And so within the collections, what kind of pieces do you create?
At the moment, I'm just doing tableware. So I'm doing mugs, bowls and plates. But yeah, I would love to expand into, you know, maybe even plant pots, you know, hanging planters and just things, simple things like that.
Put my name down for a plant pot.
Just simple things, and I don't know, toothbrush holders, pretty jars, you know, for storing stuff in the kitchen. Just simple stuff like that. nothing too elaborate. I do quite like minimal things.
And what about how they're made? So you, like, for somebody that's never actually managed to make anything, how do you take a bit of clay and end up with a glazed bowl or a glazed mug? I mean, I keep looking at my bowl every morning when I'm having cereal, and I'm looking at it, and it's just so stunning. Half of it is, the inside is glazed, and half of the outside is glazed, and then around the bottom, like, it looks like what it's supposed to look like. It looks like the sea coming up over a sandy beach, and it just blows my mind every time that you can actually, that somebody can actually create that with their two hands. So how do you get a bit of clay and make a bowl?
Yeah, I have to order it, and sometimes it takes a while. So I'm sitting waiting, like, itching to receive my clay. So yeah, you take a bit of clay, you weigh it out, slam it on the wheel, and it's such a long process. You know, it's you're never safe with your creation. You can never say that piece is safe and ready to be sold or used, because it's just so fragile at all different parts of the process. So first of all, you throw on the wheel. So if I was creating a mug, I would throw a cylinder, and depending on the size of mug, you know, I would use whatever weight of clay. And then you need to leave it to sit for about 2 days. Mm-hmm. And then I will trim the piece, which refines it, takes off excess clay. And after doing that, I would then attach a handle, which is quite fiddly. I spend so much time doing this. I am still quite new to it, and I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. So I do spend a lot of time attaching handles and just trying to get it as perfect as I can. And then mugs take a little while to dry because the handles are so delicate. So I wrap them up, and I leave them to dry for about a week. And then once they're what we would call bone dry, you would put them in the kiln for their first firing. Mm-hmm. And you would take them out, and it would be called bisqueware, and it's very absorbent, which will soak up the glaze. So then I glaze. And I actually hand paint on my glaze, which is quite time consuming. Mm. But it's lovely because it's so nice spending time, and you hold a piece, and each piece you put your all into. And yeah, you'd really focus on that one piece.
And yeah, so each piece is really unique and original.
It's had maybe, you know, 2 hours spent on it. It's just nice having that time with each piece. When I pack them up to go, like, oh, goodbye. It's so sad. So once the glaze is on, it's dried, it's back in the kiln. It's fired to an even higher temperature, around 1,200 degrees. And then I wait for it to cool down, and that's difficult sometimes. You want to open the kiln and have a look, but you need to wait until it's cool enough to open. So when it's down to room temperature, I open it up, take out my pieces, and then there's a photograph in, putting them on the website. But it's so lovely opening up the kiln.
Yeah.
And just see it. And it's all so different, like, the glaze turns out different on every single piece. They're just, you won't have a piece that's the same as another. And I glaze differently on each piece. So some will give a little bit more glaze. I glaze it in such a way as the sea flowing onto sand. Mm-hmm. So the exposed part of clay representing sand. Mm-hmm. And that's quite soothing, you know, doing that. And taking it out and seeing what has happened on each unique piece is lovely. Absorbs you.
And you said that, you know, no piece is safe. So it must be heartbreaking when when a piece that you've been working on, you've put all that time and effort in, it breaks. I mean, do you have many breakages or casualties along the way?
I do. I think most often I just have pieces where I'm such a perfectionist, and I might make something and decide to just redo it. And I think, you know, over time you will just maybe do less of that. I'm still very new to it. And honestly, it used to be heartbreaking when a piece would break. Like, it was so, it was awful. But now I've gotten to the stage where I've had so many challenges that I just don't let it get to me, because I know that I can push past it. So you just have to try and be positive and just, yeah, look at the pieces that have worked and not get soaked up in whatever hasn't worked.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier about like self-doubt and how you have to really kind of, I don't know, give yourself like a stand talking to and recognize that what you are producing is fantastic, and it's worth all the effort, it's worth selling, it's worth putting out there into the world. So how is it that you like overcome self-doubt? Because I think it is something that every business owner has got to learn how to either deal with it or at least live alongside it.
Yeah, I think anybody, but yeah, when you're coming into a business and you're, you know, you've put your all into it and you've just got to trust that it will resonate with people, that is hard. It's like, you feel quite vulnerable, actually.
Yeah.
But I because I'd been sharing like seascapes for a while.
Yeah.
People already knew I was a bit obsessed with the sea. So it kind of just flowed. Like, it did just flow. And thankfully people understood what I was doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's, sorry to interrupt, but that's how I kind of came across your work, was with your seascapes and your photography, because you're also a really capable photographer. And again, is that something that's like self-taught, or is it, I mean, how did you fall into photography too?
Well, when I was about 11, I got my first camera. My great-granddad was a photographer for a newspaper, and I have all his old cameras, and they're so cool. Like, I would look at them and I was just like, wow. But for Christmas, I asked for a camera, I got one, just a little, can't mind what it was, and I would take photos of flowers. I did attempt taking photos of the sea, but they're not worth speaking about.
Probably like my sea photography.
It's actually quite hard to capture sometimes. Like,
oh, it's impossible. I have no idea how you get the pictures you do.
There's been so many days where I've just been like so mad at myself. But you know, you're freezing, and it's you do need to move the camera along with the sea. And of course, when the sea is wild, it's going to be windy. Like, we're so exposed, and going along the coastline, yeah, it's hard work. The elements is battling against you.
Yeah.
So yeah, it started off with lambs, flowers. lambing time, that was a big subject on the craft. And then, you know, I got another camera when I was about 14, 15. And then I got a DSLR when I was about 21. Mm-hmm. Just really went for it. Nearly every weekend, just out on my own taking photos.
Yeah. And you sell some of your photographs too. So you started with an Etsy shop, and now they're on your website too.
Yeah. I thought it'd be better just to have them all together. It's all sea inspired. Just put them all together.
It's really clear when you look at your photography and then you look at the ceramic pieces that you produce, you can really see that inspiration.
It's such a
clear connection to the sea.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear, because I think sometimes I do worry that I'm not kind of getting the whole idea across. You do just worry about these things. And Yeah, it's so nice when somebody like yourself says that, and it means so much. And to be able to connect with something over the sea is really special, because we're surrounded by it. Like, it impacts our lives. You look at it every day, and it's, I don't know, I find it like a friend you return to. I go to be beside.
And how do you connect with the sea? What do you...
Usually with the camera, because you're so absorbed. It's like you're addicted. You can't not take photos. But even just walking beside the sea, kayaking, snorkeling, surfing, fishing. there's just so many ways you can appreciate the sea, which I think is, you know, it's one of the reasons why I went into this, hoping people would resonate with it, because there is an abundance of ways you can connect with the sea. And as an islander, I think most people appreciate the sea. It's amazing.
And it's an ever-changing landscape to the sea, because depending on what the weather is doing, if it's windy or if it's calm, it can be completely different. It's completely different colours, completely different tones, textures. And the landscape, the land is changes frequently too, but I think the sea, it's more extreme, it's more dramatic.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, like actually mind-blowing. And I don't think you could ever get tired of it. It's just amazing.
And the pieces that you sell are all packaged and shipped in recyclable, eco-friendly material, because you're quite passionate about protecting the environment, and in particular, again, the sea. So can you tell us just maybe a bit about what we could do, like what individuals can do to help, and why it's important
that you
keep the sea healthy?
Well, that's it, because, you know, I take my inspiration from the sea. I quite often go otter spotting. I do enjoy seeing the orcas when they're about, humpbacks, seals. So I think it's important we protect our coastline. It's so beautiful, and I would love to. We have the Vaud Red Up, which I take part in every year. And everybody around Shetland does such a good job of, you know, clearing beside roads along the coastline. Yeah, we can be doing it all year round, and I think little and often is amazing. Every time you go to the beach, just take something, because it's our job to look after it. And yeah, it's heartbreaking when you do see photos of wildlife entangled in rope or plastic. It is so heartbreaking, and when you think, oh, you are a part of it, that every single one of us is part of that. So even a plastic bottle, if I'm out for a walk, I'm just so disheartened. I genuinely feel like angry, because you'll go out for a coastal walk. There's nowhere nearby. You've dumped your tin of Monster energy juice. I found that once. And I was like, really? And it's horrible. You know, if you can carry it somewhere with you, take it home. And if you're at the beach and you see something, just take a bag and spend 5 minutes clearing up, because we can.
I think living on an island like Shetland, we're so aware of the problem of plastic pollution. And I know myself, like doing tours, some people that perhaps don't live near the sea, just they don't maybe understand just how bad the problem is. So I remember one couple that I had on a tour, and they were from a landlocked state in America. They lived in a city, so their rubbish was taken away by like garbage trucks every day, and they had no experience of the sea and what the sea can bring in. I mean, we living on an island, we see where the rubbish in the sea is coming from. We see like plastic packaging from China, we see like fish tags from like North America, and it's all washing up here. So it's like, it's a really visible problem when you live on an island. And I had them at the beach at St. Ninian's Isle, and I was picking up like small bits of rope, and they asked why I was doing it, and why, and then it got onto the conversation of why plastic was a problem, and they couldn't understand why, like, why there was such an uproar about plastic pollution. And so I actually took them, I think I had them for 2 days. So the next day we went up north and I took them to the Hillswick Wildlife Centre.
Oh, yes.
And we showed, like, and they had an exhibition next door in the weaving studio. And we saw, like, pictures, like, photographs of, like, seals and whales that were tangled with ropes. And and it really, like, by the end of that tour that I had them with, by the end of the day, they were picking up rubbish off the beach. And
putting it in. Goodness.
And I think it's just, it's education. I think we are so, like, we see it so much, we see it every day, but like so many people in the world, like, don't have any experience
with
it, they don't understand like what the problem is, because you hear people saying about like people throwing rubbish, but like a lot of the time the rubbish that washes up here is not actually from within Shetland, it's washing
that's
up
right,
from, from, it could be washing up from anywhere in the world. So
it's scary when you really think about it.
So I totally agree that it's something that we all
do. We can all do, we all just need to be more mindful.
Yeah.
Just do it. And Hillswick Wildlife Sanctuary is the only wildlife sanctuary in Shetland. I love their work. I really love their work.
Yeah, so they for anybody that isn't aware, they are like a rescue sanctuary for seals and otters and any wildlife, but predominantly seals and otters. They'll take in that have been injured, or like some seals that have maybe like lost their mother or whatever. They take them in and they rehabilitate them with the intention of rewilding them.
Yeah, they're amazing. 10% of my profits on mugs goes to the Hillswick Wildlife Sanctuary. And that was something that I wanted to do from the get-go, because they are just amazing. I love what they do.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's such a nice thing to do, actually. put part of your profit, especially as like a startup business. I mean, you're just like gone into business and you have set out in like we such a strong vision of why you're doing things, and such a good ethos as well.
Oh, thank you. It's so lovely you saying that, though, because just that you understand the whole idea. Just to give back to our coastline, where my inspiration is from.
Like, you're very open on social media about, like, how you have kind of chosen to just kind of slow down a bit and, like, live a bit more in tune with, with the natural world. And you get so much of your energy from being out and, like, enjoying, like you said, the coastline. What was it that like kind of made you come to this decision? I mean, I think back to when I was in my 20s and I had like no strong idea really of like who I was and what I wanted to do, but you seem like so like sure about what you want your life to look like. Is that something that you have kind of consciously gone after?
I don't know. Well, when I started the ceramics, it was at a point where my mental health was poor, and I was like, well, I need to do something. You know, if you can make a change for yourself, then do it. Why sit in an uncomfortable situation?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, since then, since lockdown, just being in creativity, I've just focused on that and just gone after being authentic. And I don't know, I did share that on social media about slowing down. I was like, oh no, people are gonna be like, you're in your 20s, like you don't need to slow down. But we can, and I that's the way I want to live. And as I was at the beginning of the ceramics journey, and I was spending a lot of time on the coastline, I was like, well, this is what I want to do with my life, and I'm not prepared to live it any other way.
I really admire that.
I
think it's brilliant. I think that more people should kind of just take a strong look at how it is that they're living and kind of make
if you can.
Changes. Yeah, if you can, then it's brilliant. So, I mean, like, in terms of your working week, how much of your time do you spend, like, outside, and how much would you spend in the studio?
It's funny because I have been spending less time outside now I've got the business. So you're taken away from your inspiration. It is really funny.
Yeah.
But the orcas were in Shetland the other day and I decided what can make today or for just now. And I went up north to Neston and saw orca and humpback in the same spot.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was so nice just having that time to be free and do that. And yeah, for me, that's what it's all about. But yeah, in the studio, I'm just working on island ceramics every day. Like, it's in your mind all the time. I think when it's your own business, you don't switch off.
No.
And it's nice, but sometimes it's like, you do need to force yourself. Like, I need to force myself to get out, just away from the studio, be out in the coastline and get back to the basics of the foundation of it all.
I think that's what I struggle with the most as well, is I kind of like, I'm my own boss, so I make the rules and I decide what I'm going to work on, but I spend so much time, like any spare time that I have, I spend it at the computer, like writing and working on my business, and I really have to force myself to like step away from that. And so I've actually started like tracking the hours that I'm spending just on my business, and it's averaging out at like 40 hours a week, and that's just
a lot.
It is, yeah. And yeah, so I think I need to definitely think about
getting, and you're constantly thinking, so it's 40 plus hours really.
Yeah.
and you have children too. You have children,
I know, too. They must be neglected, I think.
They're so cute.
So what do you, like, how do you see the kind of, like, the future panning out for Island Ceramics? How do you want to take it in the next few years, do you think?
I mean, right now I am happy where it's at. I do just going slow and seeing how it unfolds.
Yeah.
But yeah, one day I would really love to have a little studio set up at home, in an outbuilding, maybe like in a byre of a croft house. I mean, that's a dream, beside the sea. Old croft house, renovated byre, pretty shop, at the end of the road, very rural. Possibly just having a little shop tourists could come to. That for me is the dream. That's the goal. But I'll slowly get there. That'll take a long time, I think.
Good things always take time. That seems like such an idyllic business. And then the reality is, as you say, the being in the studio all the time and having to force yourself to go out. Hold on, Ali, that's my doorbell. It's the posse.
That's okay.
I'll run and answer the door. I'll be back.
No problem. That's okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hello, I'm back.
Hi.
That's gonna be a long edit, that one. Let me think. Where were we at? So I think I've kind of asked you everything. Is there anything that you would like to add or speak about? I have one more question, and this is a really, really important question for everybody that's listening and for me. Quain, is Island Ceramics next shop update?
it is the end of this month. So we're in March. Yeah, they're at the end of every month.
That'll be Wednesday the 31st of March.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. What I might do then is I was planning to start the podcast on on Tuesday the 30th, and I was going to have like the witches as the first episode, but I might actually switch it around and I could have Dine as the first one.
Oh god.
And then that would coincide with our shop update.
Oh, that would be so cool.
I'll do that then.
Thank you, Laurie.
I'll do that.
Thank you.
And finally, before I let you go, What three places or experiences would you recommend to somebody who's visiting Shetland? What would your kind of unmissable experiences look like?
Well, it was funny. I was writing these out and I only got two because I just think wherever you go in Shetland, it's going to be amazing. Yeah. Just go anywhere along the coastline. Well, anywhere in Shetland, but the coastline particularly. But yeah, Deepdale I just love Deepdale. Such a good walk, and you can go from Sanis or the Dale of Waas.
Yeah, and walking
it's just lovely.
Walking for the Dale of Waas. I've done both, but I think walking for the Dale of Waas side, you're seeing all the headlands. It's just like the texture and the landscape, all the headlands, it's just incredible.
It does go on a while.
you definitely need
to take snacks. But yeah, and you get snippets of the sea colour that you see in the Bay of Deepdale.
Yeah.
As you're approaching from the Dale of Waas. So that's kind of nice, you know, looking out for these snippets of colour.
I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a blog that I wrote about walking to Deepdale for anybody that wants to try to walk, because it's no signposted particularly well. It's kind of off the beaten track a bit.
Yeah, but I think that's what's so amazing about it as well.
Absolutely.
I think I've seen three hares when I've been out for a walk there once, and I sometimes just go on my own, and it's just so nice. You're the only person for miles.
Yeah.
And then the sheep get down on the beach, and it's just funny watching them clamber up, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I would probably say as well Hermanus.
Yeah.
Because when you're looking over to the Muckleflugga Lighthouse, and you've just got these massive cliffs and so many seabirds flying in front of you. I love Fulmar. And, you know, when the lights, I was there in November, December, and the light was just amazing. There was this heavy rain shower, but it just was so beautiful. And, you know, it's a long walk, but it's a steady walk.
It's definitely worth doing as well. And actually the walk itself is, like, the Hermanus walk is far more accessible in many ways, because it is like a prescribed path that you take. So there's the boardwalk that takes you out over the moor, and that's where you'll see the breeding bonksies. What's their English name? Great skewers.
Yes. Yeah.
You can tell that I've not been guiding in a while. I have to think really hard about the English names for the seabirds. But yeah, you come out over the boardwalk, and you've got the great skewers nest in there, and then you come out to the water, to the sea, and that's where in the summer you'll get the puffin's nest and then the gannet colony. It's a fantastic blog. Yeah. I have a blog about Hermanus I'll link into.
I think anywhere where there is orca, go see them. or humpback, it's just an epic experience. But I think, probably the last thing I would suggest is booking a guide with somebody like yourself. It's something I really, really want to do. It's just amazing. I love watching your videos and the passion, hearing of all the history. Like, Shetland is so rich in history, and it's just amazing to learn about. So I think that's something I need to do, but anybody coming to Shetland should definitely do, to show you around.
Oh, thank you. I'll tell you, I'll be so out of practice by the time tourism reopens that I'll probably need to have like a practice session. So,
can I come?
Yeah, you can be my victim. I'll take you on a tour.
Oh, I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
Because I feel like it's been so long. I mean, we had no tours last year. We locked down, and I don't know what this summer is going to look like. But yeah, definitely, I'll be like a rusty tour guide, so
I'm sure you won't be.
Oh, listen, Ellie, thank you so much for coming on today. And is there anything else that you would like to add?
Get out in nature. Get beside the sea.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thank you very much. And good luck with the next website update. I'll be
Yes, thank you.
I'll be there.
thank you for listening. This podcast can only be made possible by my supporters on Patreon, so a huge thank you to all my patrons. If you would like to support me in bringing you more of these shows, you can sign up and become a patron. You will find details about how to sign up in the show notes below or at www.patreon.com and just search Shetland with Laurie. And remember, you can find more on Instagram and give me a follow at Shetland with Laurie. So thank you once again for listening, and we will see you here next time. And in the meantime, safe and happy travels.